Welcome to Valley Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by KVRF in the studios of Radio Free Palmer. The moderator of Valley Edition is Mike Molesky.
Today, November 2nd, 2012, we have as guest panelists at the premier show of the Valley Edition, Zaz Hollander, Mat-Su Valley freelancer, independent journalist from the Palmer Post, an all-around good person. We also have Terry Snyder, person with a considerable reputation as a blogger. The Citizen Lobbyist is her pseudonym. And of course, we have Mark Kelsey, journalist, emeritus, and publisher of The Frontiersman. First topic, who has the last vote? That's a good question. Is it voting moms or Mother Nature? What do you think? What's the impact of this upcoming election going to be on the Valley? Let's start out with Mark.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here on this first edition of Valley Edition. I think in general, the impact of the national election is probably overstated either way. There's so many moving parts. You know, think about issues important to Alaskans, primarily opening ANWR. One president, as we've seen in recent history, can't do it alone. I think there are definitely individual issues that may come into play and be affected by who wins. But I think by and large, you know, we are isolated enough and self-contained enough that the impact will not be huge.
Okay. What about the more local elections? So down there, a lot of people going to be going to Juneau this year, some new faces probably. Any thoughts about that? Maybe we'd turn to Terry there and say, Terry, we got all these people going down there and their promises about doing stuff. What do you think?
Well, I think they certainly have more of an effect on us, the people that go to Juneau and also the ones that are elected locally. I think depending on who wins nationally, probably gives a little wind under some wings, maybe puffs some people up because that's their party that won for a little while. But by and large, you know, I have to agree with Mark. That'll dwindle down, and we'll get down to the everyday thing. I think the noise in the room is so amazing right now from every direction, and actually, Alaska's pretty guarded in that. There are so many candidates that don't have opposition, particularly in the Valley, that it's just aren't subject to near what's happening outside. So I think the voters basically have voter fatigue right now. So it will play out as it plays out.
Okay. And we're not into predictions so much. But what I'm wondering about, for example, is one of the places that everybody's been looking at, and that's the Senate coalition. So, Zaz, do you have any ideas about that?
Well, in terms of the Valley elections, you know, we don't have the big four races aren't Valley races, but obviously the candidates from the Valley, the incumbents, have a clear stake in some changes and some reforms to the oil tax system. Their challengers are running more with the bipartisan coalition, so that's clearly a big issue here. And in terms of the national election, I think the only interesting piece of that is, you know, in terms of health care, with Governor Parnell's stance on Obamacare, it's depending on where the courts play out, it may not matter in terms of who's president.
Okay. And Mark?
Yes, I would add that there's also, you know, there's a little drama possibly even playing out now in Juneau that involves or could well involve a local person or two in the Senate. You speak of the coalition. There's a lot of buzz now about Charlie Huggins maybe being the new Senate president if the coalition breaks down, which, you know, there seems to be ample evidence out there that that's going on with recent defections or talk of defections by folks like Kevin Meyer and Lisa McGuire. I would say it's pretty obvious that the coalition is at least in jeopardy, and that could land Charlie Huggins in the Senate presidency.
Okay. So what we have is we have no predictions for whether one side is going to win or not, but we do have a sense that if something happens in Juneau, make sure I'm getting this right, if something happens in Juneau to take the Senate coalition down, there will be difference in the Valley? Any? in terms of life on the streets, life in the cities?
Well, I would say that, you know, it could, just because I think there'll be more aggression when it comes to probably extraction of things. They'll probably get a little more of a pass there and a little more full steam ahead. I mean, there's still, besides the oil tax, there's a lot of talk about a gas line, and that certainly has implications for the Valley. So, you know, that who ends up in that chair could have a big effect. But a lot of this talk is pre-election talk, and
sure.
Once the ballots are cast, that's really when the side. I think Ms. Senator Huggins, there was some thought he would be Senate President last time, which kind of left him as the odd man out. So, boy, things happen really fast once the election is over.
Okay. Well, speaking about the election, we know that on the East Coast there's been a significant storm, Hurricane Sandy, and that seems to have had some November surprise effect on the election. What do you think? Any observations from this distance, particularly about Mayor Bloomberg, Governor Christie?
It definitely adds a fun element of intrigue to the mix. Seeing Chris Christie, you know, roaming around the destruction zone in New Jersey with President Obama. You know, think about how it was a month ago. At the core level, those feelings are probably still there, but there's no mistake on the effect of seeing Chris Christie with President Obama and even saying things like the president deserves a lot of credit. It's got to have an effect.
Okay. Well, that's that. And Zaz, any thoughts?
Well, I grew up in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. So
that's home turf. And actually, the house I grew up in is in Hopewell, New Jersey, which is was kind of right in the path of the storm once it made landfall. And to see the governor of New Jersey kind of walking almost arm in arm with the president after all the history they have was remarkable. But it also, I was listening to Alaska News Nightly a few nights ago, and, you know, Mayor Bloomberg talking about the connection with global warming and these big storms coming through, which I found ironic given that this election season is the first since 1984 that global warming has not come up as an issue in debates. And it's surprising a lot of people. And so here comes this huge storm. A researcher from Rutgers University has found that the changing Arctic climate and warming in the Arctic has led to a kind of a meandering jet stream that puts these storms in place much longer than they would normally be. And so you've got this jet stream. I'm gesturing with my hands right now in a jet stream shape, but it weaves around instead of staying in one spot. And so these storms don't move out as quickly. Droughts stay in place longer. And so I guess there's a certain irony to this big storm just walloping the Mid-Atlantic a few days before an election.
Right, and of course we've had our recent experience with flooding here on a somewhat smaller scale, except very, very important to those people who suffered, both communities, individuals, and so on. I'm wondering, Terry, any comments about what you notice as recovery from the flooding here?
Well, I guess I'll be the cynic. I think politically I'm a little cynical. I think that this sort of just reinforces what I kind of say all the time is that, you know, it's not about the next generation, it's about the next election. And there's a lot of, you know, people looking at Christie and looking at Bloomberg saying, boy, they're all of a sudden thinking recovery. There's going to be some big bounce back here because destruction is also very profitable. And they both have, you know, there was some suggestion that either one of them could have been a candidate this time around against Obama. But certainly 4 years from now looks a lot better than 8 years from now. So, and as far as ours locally, you know, we're still in the chute for to be determined whether or not we're going to actually get that federal disaster relief money. We've gotten state, but at this point the jury's still out. And in comparison to what we're seeing on the East Coast, even though it was substantial to some people's lives here in the Valley, it's pretty minimal next to that. And there is it's billions of dollars they're talking about. So it'll be interesting if there is some type of an interruption. And I would think that the borough is pretty much counting on that federal money coming through for cleanup of the efforts that they did incur here.
Well, last night the borough mayor did comment that they were nearing the magic number of $10 million And once that amount was reached, there was some chance that that federal money would be released. He spoke at a Buffalo Mine Soapstone Community Council meeting last night, just to bring people up to date. So that's the other aspect of it, because what's being played out is that question of, can you do it yourself? Can you rebuild your own house? Can a local community do that? When do you go to the next level of government, whether it's the city, the state, or the feds, in order to get that money? And that's been the background theme on much of the campaigning that's been going on. Should big government intervene? And so this is going to be an interesting thing to see the impact of how the president and others do in this situation that is pretty severe.
There is definitely a role for government in this at all levels. And I think it's important to note at the local level, as well as, you know, what's happening on the East Coast, that the response of emergency people has been incredible.
Extraordinary, right.
And an extension of that here at home, the power of neighbor helping neighbor, you know, I think we see the stories, we report the stories, and it just becomes a part of the fabric. You know, that's a huge thing. We need to think about that and think about what it means to live in a place where people help each other. It's huge.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's slip a little bit down to the economy, the financial situation. A number of people, including Neil Fried, economist here in the state, has pointed out that both the state and, for that matter, the Valley has done pretty well in the economic downturn. It has not suffered as compared to other places. What's your opinion about that? Would you say we are an anomaly or what? When do we start with Zaz this time?
I think we've been kind of insulated by defense spending until a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe not so much the Valley as much as statewide, but you know, we've got the things happen in Alaska a year and a half after they happen everywhere else phenomenon going on.
Sure.
But I think, I mean, I've talked with Neil about that, that the defense spending in Anchorage and Fairbanks, Kodiak a little bit, served as kind of a buffer for a little while, and now the defense spending is starting to tank. And so the next 5 years, I think, are going to be very interesting times.
Okay. And, of course, the big issue is investment in oil and whether that continues to fuel our economy. Mark, any comments about that?
Well, I think it's inevitable for the foreseeable future. You know, that's what we have, and we need to make the most of it. But at the same time, we need to be planning ahead. Nasty P word, planning. We need to think about what we'll be doing here for jobs, for revenue, when the oil's gone. And for that matter, what we'll be doing to heat our homes. We need to think ahead. Diversifying the economy has been a popular topic. There's a lot of talk, and there's a lot of good ideas, too. It's time to really get these things rolling, and projects like the port, the dam, these are things that are long-term, you know, foundational elements for the future of the state and our economy. We need to think big, not be afraid to think big, and then follow through with it.
Okay, Terry?
Well, not getting back too far back into the weather things, I think that we have to also realize that the ramifications of something that huge, what does that do to the rest of the projects? You know, we have a lot of big projects, and, you know, we're a young state, so we're now starting to build our infrastructure, and we've just destroyed 20% of the population's infrastructure. So while we were vying for some federal money, and it was going to get pretty slim pickings, you know, that we knew already, I think that's even heightened now. And so I think there'll be more of a talk about dependency on our own, on ourself. And so that could make us look a little differently at the way oil taxes are done. That you know, $2 billion giveaway that the governor wanted to do may not have as much support this time around because, you know, we don't have that money to fling around. We have to make the most of our investments. So the borough has been very lucky the last few years just because of its growth in being the recipient of a lot of projects. But that doesn't mean there's not a lot of needs statewide. So it again, could be play out pretty interesting. And, you know, planning is, you know, part of that, that you have a chance to do it right the first time. And we're resistant to that, but we may have to look at that a little closer now because, you know, we're there because of the funds, again, down to the dollar.
Well, both Mark and Terry have used the P word, planning. And
the building checking.
And that there's been controversy about planning for many years here in the Valley. And this is planning for where you can put roads, schools, you name it. Zaz, do you have any comments to make about what you see as the present state or attitude of the community toward planning?
Well, there are so many layers of community in this borough. I mean, it's hard to get a read on just one. I think in some areas there's a little bit of a disconnect between the attitude on the prevailing attitude on the assembly right now, maybe as evidenced by the tall towers issue, and and what the community is looking for in just sort of basic government oversight, just to ensure that the public has a say one way or the other as to what happens in their neighborhoods. You know, the tall towers ordinance or lack thereof being an example of that. I would be loath to try to assign a belief structure to this borough. The University of Alaska did just send out a number of surveys asking about planning, so
that's right.
I'll wait for those results and report them.
Okay. Over the years, many people have addressed that issue, that question of attitudes toward land use planning or planning in general here. And what we have seen, it appears in some cases that the lack of planning has resulted in some problems, particularly around road structures, or for that matter, the combination of roads and schools. I'm thinking about the original placement of a South Palmer Elementary School, which became very controversial because the site looked good, but the road access became real difficult. So any other comments about planning, Terry?
Well, I guess I would say that, you know, I think if you look at it in perspective, it's always a reaction to an action, or it's sort of an overcorrection to an action. And I think what you're seeing now is, you know, a complete, instead of, you know, looking at things and trying to fix what the problem is, it's more of a replacement. And I think what gets lost there and what's hard to calculate is what's the cost of that? If we roll everything the other way, what's the cost of rolling it back? Because we know eventually that will happen. And finding middle ground is becoming harder and harder to find, not just on a national level. We've seen that with Congress. But we're seeing that, you know, in other. It's either one way or the other way, and everything in the middle, whereas, you know, the sort of the sense is getting lost. So we'll hopefully we'll find some correction with that.
I think Terry makes a great point there about how the fringes, each side of the argument, you know, more and more that seems to be driving the dialogue, and it's not constructive. I definitely am sympathetic to overregulation and, you know, the bad effect it can have. But, you know, let's face it, a little planning is never a bad thing.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, we've talked about some pretty big topics here. I'm wondering if, as you think back over this past week, are there any singular events that have happened, have popped up that might be worth putting a little attention on? For example, there's been a recent article in The Frontiersman that dealt with a candidate for the legislature who has been involved in what appears to be an interesting, if not controversial, issue with loans and ag land, et cetera. It's kind of that classic mix of it's not simple, it's all kind of complicated. How do you think that coming in particular at this time, we're talking about appearing on a Friday before the Tuesday election. What's your thoughts about that? Maybe we should start with Terry first because she's
Well, I think people have been hearing about this for some months. The timing is the timing, but I think people that, you know, are sort of involved in this have been seeing this. This is just a process of peeling the onion back. A lot of it I kind of blame on the fact that the information's available these days. A lot of these deals, these kind of the same core of people profiting has been going on for a long, long time, not just here in the Valley, but in Anchorage as well. It's just that now the information, as the paths are crossing and as the noise is getting louder, it's just hard to not talk about it. And, you know, there is a clear difference, and we should be reminded, between public money and private money. And, you know, that dialogue kind of gets lost. And so, you know, I think we're going to see more of this type of reporting as people are more concerned on how their public money is being spent.
Okay.
I agree. I think the part of it that's about the public money is really what makes it a newsworthy story. It's less about the person or people involved than it is the bigger issue of public money, how it's used, how it's cared for. I mean, there seems to have been, you know, maybe not the best stewardship of that, you know, on the part of the borough, and, you know, the borough hand not knowing what the state hand is doing. It's much less about the person than it is about the bigger issues. But these are things we definitely need to confront and solve going forward.
Okay. Zaz?
Well, I mean, as the reporter who wrote this story about the Point Mac easements and the extension project, I think it's a story regardless of the people involved because of the money involved. You know, almost $190,000 in borough money that went toward these easements that turned out to be unnecessary but also violated state laws. There's a candidate involved in the story. I mean, I personally wouldn't have minded if the story had kind of come to light several months ago. I mean, the timing certainly was not intentional. But the bigger picture, the bigger question this raises is, how are these two governments going to deal with each other if the bridge comes in, when the rail extension gets back underway? These agriculture covenants are still out there, and that problem hasn't been resolved yet. There's some discussions going on between the borough and DNR. The legislature can lift the covenants. But at this point, that question is still very much out there.
Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead, Terry.
Well, I would also think that, I mean, that's a really good point, but I think that, you know, it's sort of our perception is our reality, and I've seen sort of a lackadaisical attitude towards the borough with these big checks being written, and they are taxpayers' money. While they're running around, some of them telling us, contrary to what Neil Fried has reported, that the sky has fallen, we have no money, every month we write a $50,000 or $60,000 check for a ferry. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And, you know, while we're counting pennies, are we giving away huge dollars? And again, going back to the same thing, it really would not matter who it was. It's public and private money. And that's the point. And as we move forward on these big projects with the port, you know, we need to know who the players are and who's profiting and who's not with public money. Again, you know, so...
And I know that the borough is focused on the railroad extension as the prime important thing to happen. And all of this story involving the monies, the background is the rail extension. That's what it's all about. And any thoughts about that? Because it seems to be stalled for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the appeals court has delayed the project until this lawsuit over whether the Surface Transportation Board was accurate in reviewing the need for the project itself. And there's, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions about the beneficiaries of the extension once it goes in. Usabelli is certainly one, but there's some question marks about others.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say.
But coal definitely drives that lawsuit.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we
Well,
we,
and it also may drive the rail spur. So, I mean, it's sort of both of them are being driven by, you know, one thing perhaps.
But the rail spur has... Yes, coal is what makes it viable right now, but the rail spur will be used for more than coal in the future. I mean, this rail spur, I mentioned thinking big earlier. This is a think big project. This opens up huge amounts of land and it's just a huge economic development project. It's a build it and they will come kind of project. Nothing happens without the rail. It also makes a bridge more viable. A bridge makes the rail more valuable. They're kind of, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to think of one without the other ultimately. But I think it's a good project. Yeah, it may not be perfect, but what is? We can't not do something because it isn't perfect. This is a great project with long range, huge potential for the borough and the state.
Okay. And Zaz, Terry, are you in agreement with that? What do you think?
I just report the stories. I think well, that it's certainly in terms of coal transport, in terms of opening up all kinds of industry. That port has taken a lot of money and really needs that injection to
make
go.
It work.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Terry?
Right. Well, I think we have to remember, too, there's a port just across the pond, and a lot of these projects, the pushback that you see from the public is from the process, not really the project. They can't really see the project. They see the process that it has taken and hasn't been exactly of their liking. And, you know, we're at a time that it's been sort of the pesky little port, and now the port has become very competitive and reality to, you know, just across the way, who's also vying. We didn't talk about it, but there's a transportation element bond in the election that's huge for this state, some $453 million that has almost, I think, over 70 million of it is just for the Matsu area. So, you know, there's a lot of implications, again, a lot of needs. And, you know, everybody's going to pick their favorite, and we are sort of the king of build it and they will come. We built a high school and a middle school out in Houston and with neighborhoods that were going to go up, and they didn't come. And we've been under enrollment and struggling with that since. We built a ferry that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. So people have a reason, I think, to be a little queasy with these things. And there's an enormous amount of money going into that port, and I think people are beginning to visualize it, but they don't all agree on the best method of getting there and what should not happen at other corners of a needy borough because that's happening.
Absolutely, so. And that's why it's so important. You know, vigilance is always important, and holding elected people accountable is important. And things like this, you know, we really need to make sure, whether we're for it or against it, we need to make sure that the money is being spent wisely and not wasted.
Okay. Terry just brought up that point that there's more on the ballot than the election of officials. There's that transportation bond. There's another item on there. Quick, we just have a minute left. Your thoughts about whether the state of Alaska should have a constitutional convention or not?
I think it's a neat idea, but I think ultimately, I think in practice, there's way more danger than potential benefit. There's plenty of infrastructure in place to amend the Constitution or to change something we don't like. You know, I think going to a free-for-all, a potential free-for-all with a constitutional convention opens the door to some unsavory elements that, you know, could have unintended consequences.
Okay. Zaz, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a question that has to be asked every 10 years, and right. Now's not the time.
Okay. Terry?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, throw the whole process out and start over again. I think the bones have served us really well, and timing is probably, you know, not in our best interest with the way, you know, everything's going right now.
Okay. Well, talking about timing, we are running out of time. So I want to thank the three people who have come here and shared their opinions about what's been happening lately, and we hope to be back after the election. To talk a little bit more about the implications of the results. So Mark Kelsey, Zaz Hollander, and Terry Snyder, thank you very much for coming on in, and we'll hope to see you next week.
If you have any questions or comments about Valley Edition, email us at manager@radiofreepalmer.org. Valley Edition is a production of KVRF. The views and opinions are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent those of KVRF or its underwriters.